video, right?
Oh.
Yeah.
The amount of famous people in that video is insane.
There were some older people there who I think I knew a bit more than those people, okay, but like, got more people.
It is. Even Tom Ford was in it.
Yeah.
What's this?
It's the new Paul McCartney video.
Oh, okay, I'll have to look for that.
It's got like a million people in it, like so Johnny Depp, Chris Pine,
Kate Moss,
Meryl Streep, Tom Ford, Sean Penn, Jude Law. Like, they just keep coming with famous people in it. It's kind of like it.
And the song is okay, even.
Yeah.
It must be nice to be a Beatle and get everybody famous to do
things for you. And they're all in like Avenue. Pretty sure they just kept coming and no one stopped. I think that's how the video showed up.
Yeah, did you see the making of?
Yeah.
No, I didn't.
He was like, oh yeah, they just appeared. It's like, it seemed like you didn't know who was coming. Paul.
Yeah. Hello and welcome to all visitors from across the universe. You're listening to the Across the Universe podcast, brought to you as always by the Chicks with Accents. I'm Matt from Germany, and I blog at Lime Reviews and Strawberry Confessions. With me today is Nick from India.
Namaste.
Nick blogs at Being Norma Jean. With us as well is Sophia from Portugal.
Hola.
Sophia blogs at Film Flare. And as our first guest ever this episode, we are proud to have someone very special here this week. You could say the unofficial founder of the podcast, Ryan McNeil from The Matinee and The Matinee Cast.
Bonjour, I'm from Canada.
We'll be hearing more about Ryan as well as talk about our favorite music-related movies that are not musicals. But first, let's listen to this trailer from another podcast of the LAMB Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a proud member of the LAMB Podcasting Network. Find the network at largeassmovieblogs.com.
All right, guys, so we need to record our top three reasons why you should listen to French Toast Sunday podcast.
Number three should definitely be our diverse opinions.
Number two should probably be our top three lists that we do every week.
No, it's got to be Mark Wahlberg.
What about Gwyneth Paltrow's head?
It's got to be Fighting the Sadness in the Swamp of Sadness.
Full Frontal.
Stories about being lost at sea.
Brendan Fraser being underground.
Helen Mirren's boobs.
Baltimore accents as heard in The Wire.
Wunderklaus.
Crepes.
Character studies.
Wait, guys. What about movies?
Tree rape.
Tree rape? Yeah, I like
tree rape. Tune in every Friday for a new episode of French Toast Sunday podcast, brought to you by us at FrenchToastSunday.com.
Clothing made out of Burger King wrappers.
Usually, we'd be talking about our movie of the month, movie of the fortnight here in this spot, but we figured that both you, the listeners, and we ourselves would be sort of bored by talking about just individual movies all the time, since we have a lot of movies to talk about today. So instead, we want to get to know our guest a little better this time. So we prepared a little questionnaire for you, Ryan. Our first question is, what was your first favorite movie?
My first favorite movie, I had two that I kind of had to choose between, and ultimately I went with the cartoon. There was the one that I was thinking about was The Wizard of Oz. That was one that was shown to me very early on, and that I latched on to quite a bit. But the one that I watched a little bit earlier than that, and I think I probably hung on to it a little bit longer as well, was Walt Disney's Robin Hood. That's the one where Robin Hood is a fox, and Little John is a bear, and maybe Marion is a fox as well. That one, I could sing all the little songs, and I loved all the characters, and I think I dressed up as Robin Hood for my first three or four Halloweens. And we had a taped copy of it. This was back when you would rent VHSs from the shop. My parents would sometimes hook up two VCRs and just copy the tape. Yeah. So I must have worn that tape out. I swear I probably wore that tape out. But that was definitely my first favorite movie when I was a child.
Okay. I don't
No? It's pretty cute actually.
Yeah, it's pretty cute.
Another like Disney movie I was on at some point. I'm trying to like watch more Disney.
Okay. See, the funny thing is, it's not one of their classics. Like, if you were coming to me and saying, I want to do a Disney syllabus, it's not even going to be in one of the first 10 movies I suggest. It's definitely second tier, but it's so fun. It's really charming. And, you know, it was handy, so I watched it a lot.
Yeah, I remember that this trailer for this movie was on my first favorite movie tape from The Little Mermaid. But
Okay.
I don't remember if I've ever really seen it. But yeah. Okay. The next question is, what was the last movie you recommended to someone?
That was actually a hard question. And I really had to think about that because for some strange reason, I haven't recommended a whole lot to much of anybody lately. But the way I've decided to kind of bend it is last week on my drive into work, I do not know how it came up in the first place, but my wife and I were talking about Ridley Scott's Blade Runner, which I know you guys discussed quite a bit episode before last.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really thrilled to hear that you guys loved it too. It's a movie that I adore. But apparently I don't adore it that much because I found out that my wife hadn't seen it, even though we have a copy in the apartment. So I'm going with that because I said, like, she's traveling right now, but I'm like, as soon as you get back and as soon as you're unpacked and life is back to normal, we must watch Blade Runner. So I think that counts as the last movie I recommended with vigor at that.
That's great. Great to hear. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I think we talked a lot about it, so.
I did actually have a question. Did any of you happen to watch the edition with the narration over top of it?
No,
I don't think so.
I read.
Oh, okay, because that's the thing. Like, there's several versions of it now.
Yeah.
How many? Like seven?
Yeah, a lot.
Sufficiently four.
Okay.
But okay. So there was the edition that got released that didn't really do well in theaters, and when that happened, the studio decided that audiences might take to it better if there was some, you know, noir-esque, dry-toned Harrison Ford narration over top. And that version has its fans. Like, I know Guillermo del Toro, like, prefers that version.
Okay.
That's not going to be what I show my wife, but I was just curious if anybody watched that, because it kind of makes things play a little bit differently.
Yeah, I read this article in some magazine a long time ago where they talked about the several versions and the production of the movie and how everybody hated the narration version.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even Harrison Ford apparently hated it.
Yeah.
But, okay.
Well, he is kind of grumpy anyway, as we've seen.
Yeah. Yes. The next question is, what's your favorite female character of all time?
Again, this one took some thought, and I this is probably not going to be the most popular answer, but it's kind of the one that I latch on to, which seems strange to me. I went with Karen Sisko, who is the federal officer that Jennifer Lopez plays in Out of Sight.
Uh-huh. Have you guys seen
that movie?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. So, you know, it seems really strange to me to be saying my favorite female character is Jennifer Lopez performance, because on the surface that's absurd. But I really think that it's a really well-written character. You know, the fact that she's attracted to the guy who she's chasing also makes things a little bit more complicated. But that when the chips are down, she does the right thing, and she's got a lot of toughness to her, especially in the scene where she goes to this kind of safe house in Detroit. She starts out by talking to Viola Davis about the Don Cheadle character that she's looking for, and the conversation kind of quickly gets coerced by Isaiah Washington, who is sort of tries to intimidate her, but she just doesn't back down at all, and she ends up like kicking his ass with a baton. So like you put all of that together, you know, like she's really well written. She's got some great lines. She's got amazing chemistry with George Clooney in that movie. So strange as it is for me to choose it, I'd have to go with Karen Sisko as my favorite female character.
Wow.
That is original. I was not expecting that.
I was kind of trying, like, you know, there's a lot of answers that, like, came to my head, but I really needed to latch on to favorite.
Mm-hmm. No, but it is interesting, because I think most people, and me included, would be more focused on her relationship with George Clooney, and not her character in itself, so.
Yeah.
It's actually good of you to notice her. You lost the mist of it all.
I've seen it a lot of times.
Yeah.
She was really good in that. I didn't expect that. I thought, you know, it's just going to be like Clooney, and it's by Soderbergh, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought, like, you know, it'd be like, I don't know, more about that. So I was kind of pleasantly surprised by her.
Actually, I generally like Jennifer Lopez in films.
I generally like her in anything, and I just think that she chooses the wrong roles. I mean, I've seen her on. Just, for example, the Ellen DeGeneres show, she was really great on there on some sketch, and...
Yeah.
She's not that bad, I mean...
No, she just, like you said, she needs to make some better choices. I'm kind of hoping that now that she's not quite as big a pop star, that maybe she'll choose some better roles, but who knows?
Who knows if she'll get them, at any rate.
Well, there's that, too, yeah.
Okay, and our last question to you is, what's your favorite non-English movie?
My favorite non-English movie is one of, not exactly the first one, but one of the first ones that I ever saw, and certainly the first one I ever saw in a theater, and I'm very ashamed to say that that happened at my age, at age 24. Sorry, it was the second one I saw in a theater, because it's after Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. My favorite non-English movie is Talk to Her, by Pedro Almodovar, which I was just floored when I saw that. I got to see that at the at my first full Toronto International Film Festival, and I really didn't read much about it before I chose the selection. I read that it was by the director of All About My Mother, so I was like, oh well, I heard that movie was good. Maybe this will be good, and I was rocked when I saw it. And even like every time I've revisited it, I really like how complicated it is, because you're, for a minute or two, you're kind of pulling for somebody who does some really, really awful things. And you don't know whether you're supposed to feel mad or feel sad. But it's been a film I've revisited many, many times through the years, and it's still my favorite Almodovar movie. And because it was one of my first ones, it kind of has a special place for me.
Good.
It's my favorite too.
Nice.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. So.
Me neither, but I have a story.
You're in for good times. Well, that's kind of the wrong way to say it. But you're in for something special.
But I actually have the DVD. I've had it for years and just never got around to it. No, it has a bad cover, maybe. I don't know.
Cool.
I love it. It's like my number 100 and my top 100. But yeah.
Oh, it's in my like top 20.
Wow.
I was kind of hard. My first Almodovar was Women on the Road with a Nervous Breakdown. And even though it's mentor, I kind of love it for that. And I thought nothing would top that. But yeah.
Cool. So we'll be back with our general discussion after this song that fits the discussion. Bye. week our topic is music-related films, excluding musicals. Of course, opinions can vary as on how to define what exactly a musical is, but I think we'll get to that later. Our plan with the guest episodes is to have a topic suited to the guest. And so, Ryan, your interest in music is something that struck us. In fact, we just, all three of us, or four of us, had a Twitter conversation about one of your favorite bands and one of Nick's favorite bands. So I'm just going to ask right now, is it, we're right about that, or you are interested in music, or is it just something that we, you know, you're just generally interested in, or is your interest bigger than that of most people, or?
No, actually, that is a good question, because when I first decided to start writing a blog that was going to be about more than my regular day-to-day life, I sat down and I had to decide whether I was going to, I was like, the two things that I know the most about that I could probably write about well are movies or music. So I think, like, I need to choose one of those, and that's what I'm going to write about. And I think in the end I tossed a coin. So I came this close to never writing about movies at all and only writing about music. That wasn't a fluke. That is very much part of my DNA. Music has always been really, really special and important in my family, even though neither one of my parents are musically inclined. My mom can sing. My dad definitely cannot. my brother and I both sing, and I know he can kind of bluff his way through piano notes as well. Music has always been really important to me ever since I was a very small child.
Okay, great. Yeah, and this actually fits very well with, for example, the upcoming Coen Brother movie, Inside Llewyn Davis, and there's also some kind of trend about concert movies, I've noticed. I mean, there's just a lot of trailers, like the Metallica concert movie, yeah, and Muse concert movie, Robin Williams. So I think that...
Isn't there a One Direction movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was coming out on the same day as Doctor Who.
Oh, and God.
Like, Doctor Who fan people are really pissed about that. But I don't care.
Wow. Yeah. So... yeah, to get back to my initial question, I just listened to some other podcasts that talked about musicals, and they had this sort of discussion on what exactly is a musical. And just so I think that we've all chosen films that I wouldn't consider a musical, but maybe does anybody of you have a suggestion for some definitions of a musical, or of what movie would not be a musical, but music?
I think a musical is when the characters sing their feelings and what's happening, no?
Mm-hmm.
Like when it's a normal situation, they just break out into a song.
Yeah, that's...
yeah. I know the clearest definition I've heard is when the song expresses part of the plot.
Yeah.
Or part of the feeling. That's when you stray over into musical territory as opposed to film.
Yeah, that's what I would agree to.
Same. I don't know if Bollywood actually counts.
I would say it does.
There's a lot of songs. There are a lot of songs that don't need to be there at all, but they're there.
Yeah, that's one thing. I would say that there are Bollywood musicals and there are Bollywood non-musicals, and the ones that are musicals are when characters sing in a situation that you wouldn't normally sing in.
Well, but again, in Bollywood, that's kind of like...
all the time, yeah. They sing when they're going shopping.
Yeah.
Exactly, like the movie I saw today, right? You know, I said it's a superhero movie, and then in the movie, there's like this mystique sort of character, you know, like from X-Men.
Mm.
Right.
She falls in love with like the main superhero, and then there's like this random songs like shot in a desert about that. Which, so It was kind of like that. That song was shot better than the entire movie, by the way.
But again, that's the typical dream sequence thing, so I guess it is some sort of musical thing. But okay, so I think we'll just get into our top three from here on. Should we do any honorable mentions?
I mean, we could. I had like six movies.
I had two.
To put down. Really?
Yeah. Well, I threw them out early on just because I felt like I speak about them too much. Almost Famous, which is my favorite movie ever. I feel like I talked that into the ground, so I left that one out. And Once, which I also feel like I've talked about an awful lot. So I left that one aside.
Okay.
Isn't Once a musical though? Yeah. That's like,
yes, there's one song that Marquetta, the girl, sings that expresses feelings, and that kind of tipped. That was the other reason why I threw it out, was because I was like, because there's that one moment where it tiptoes over into musical territory. I was like, I'm just gonna leave it out.
Yeah, and I was looking up Once too, and it said even in the IMDb description, it said. It's a modern day musical about this and that.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Nick, did you have any?
I don't have an honorable mention. Actually, like I think you're gonna mention it later. Like a friend of mine, she inboxed me with some of her choices, and she had given A Clockwork Orange one of them. Which at first, I was like, no, that doesn't count. But now that I'm thinking about it, like, doesn't it? I don't know.
I don't think so.
Oh.
music plays a very part in that movie, but that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's that music is one of the main topics in that. I don't know. But
yeah.
I did have Pitch Perfect. Just I know it's not that great of a movie, but it's just fun and I don't know. I had a good time watching it. And
the cup thing that everyone went crazy about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I had Amadeus, movie about Mozart, and sort of a new movie called The Broken Circle Breakdown, which is a Dutch movie.
I keep hearing about that. I've heard it's fantastic.
It's really good, yeah. But it's heart-wrenching, so I won't watch it again, but it has a lot of bluegrass music, which I didn't know much about before, so, yeah.
I left out La Môme, La Vie en Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that one, and Nowhere Boy, because what I like about that movie is actually Aaron Johnson's performance, so...
I thought you were just
going to
say Aaron Johnson.
Me too. But, you know.
Okay.
It was actually good.
I didn't like the movie, but I liked Aaron Johnson.
So. Yeah, the movie, yeah. But Aaron Johnson was really good. And he's actually a good singer.
Yeah,
I liked it. I don't know. Maybe it's more than that. I don't know.
Okay, so we agreed to just... briefly mention or briefly talk about our three and two, and then we'll talk a little bit more about our number one. So I'm gonna start this time since I'm hosting. And
I'm sorry, my cat is really happy she does that.
Okay. My number three is Taking Woodstock, the Ang Lee movie from 2009, I guess. Yeah, 2009. It's a very colorful movie, and I'm sure I didn't understand it when I watched it, but I just remember it being hilarious and actually not introducing me to a lot of the artists, but just confirming my interest in 60s music and just stuff like that, and hippie culture. It's very interesting, and as I said, very funny. It has a lot of comedic sides to it, and just the story of the Woodstock Festival is actually, I didn't expect it to be that way. I mean, just started out very little, and then lots of people kept coming, and it just went all crazy. So, and it's told from the perspective of the guy who, I don't know if he did plan it in real life. It says it's only inspired by the actual events, but it's really funny and just a very, not something I would have expected from Ang Lee as a director. So.
Yeah. I was kind of disappointed by it, though. I remember watching it. You know what I was expecting? I was expecting what Woodstock the documentary was. And then there was all like this behind-the-scenes stuff happening in it. So I was just like, eh. But, yeah.
Okay.
That was like my only memory of it. I really like Woodstock.
I only saw it one time, but I seem to remember really liking Liev Schreiber in it.
Yeah.
Isn't he playing like a cross-dressing ex-Marine?
Yeah, I think something like that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, it has a lot of... It has Emile Hirsch and Paul Dano in supporting roles.
Oh, there's Paul Dano in it?
Yeah.
I like
it.
So.
Does Paul Dano get beaten up in that movie? Because that seems to be his thing lately.
Yeah.
He gets beaten up?
But I don't remember, but...
Awesome. Oh, okay.
But there's...
He was probably just like a hippie.
Yeah,
so he probably doesn't get beaten up.
But yeah. he definitely takes some LSD, and there's a really cool scene where I felt very close to experiencing what it's like to take LSD, so that's there.
Okay.
Nick?
My number three is To Go That Rock, which I think we'll discuss later.
Oh, yeah. Sophia?
My number three. Yeah, it's Walk the Line. It's about Johnny Cash. And before that, I really never had listened to Johnny Cash per se, but after that, I went completely nuts over him. And it starts Joaquin Phoenix, and this is it's the thing that it's greatest about this movie. It's him. I think it's one of my favorite performances from him. And have you ever seen it?
Yeah.
So he has this really deep voice, and he sings, which is perfect for Johnny Cash. And I don't know, it's just, and that scene where he sings Folsom Prison Blues at a recording studio when they're first admitted, do you remember?
Yeah, absolutely.
Not exactly, but
that's, I haven't seen it.
Oh wow!
I've been wanting to watch it for a very long time, but it's just...
You have to. I mean, I don't know if there's normally a film that people like, but
yeah, I'll watch it.
I guess you have to, because his performance for me, it's haunting. I mean, the way he breaks down in front of you,
yeah,
it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. It's very dark, very depressing. It's amazing.
And even Reese Witherspoon is really good in it, I think, and
she's very energetic and sweet.
Yeah,
and then there's all these hints of Elvis appearing.
It's just great that I had listened to, or I already loved Johnny Cash before seeing this, but I still listened to the soundtrack, which is sung by the actors. So
exactly,
that speaks for itself, I think.
Yes, he can. Joaquin Phoenix can sing in a very emotional way. I think you can really see what he's feeling in his in the way he sings. At least for me,
there's a real honesty about it, right?
Very, yeah.
Okay, Ryan, you're number three.
My number three is a film that is a personal favorite of mine. I went with High Fidelity. Which is less about the playing of music and more about the love and obsession of music, and how it relates to one man's tremendously awful track record when it comes to romance. It's kind of funny because when I first read this book before I even saw the film back in 99, and then I saw the film the next spring, and I really, really identified with it at the time because I was just going through a horrendous string of romances. And it was only later on, like 5 or 6 years later, that I watched the movie and realized how big a dick the main character played by John Cusack actually is. And the main reason is, like, you don't even really realize it at the time. It's mostly because it's John Cusack, and you're kind of looking at how cool and how charming and everything he is. And that's what supersedes the character's dickishness. But there's a lot of great musical conversation. There's a lot of great songs played. I think it's kind of the main reason why the whole world started doing top five lists and top 10 lists, because it was really kicked into high gear after this movie. But it's so much fun to watch.
Yeah. I love High Fidelity.
I've never seen it, but I really, really liked it. I know. it's just one of those.
Like anytime one of you says that you haven't seen one of these, I get the huge smile on my face, and I think you get to watch it for the first time because I can't go back and start over, right? So I look forward to hearing what you think about it when you do get to see it. No pressure, nothing.
Okay. I will.
You like it?
I know. There's a lot of. I just recently saw this quote, which I loved so. I really want to watch it. And I love Nick Hornby, or however you pronounce his name.
You got it.
Okay. my number two is... Actually, I wanted to swap... I just swapped my two and one last minute. But my number two is Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist, and we're going to talk about that later on. So it's Nick's turn.
My number two is Control, and we talk about it later on. I have, like, no points of my
own. It's the same. It's number two for me, too.
Yeah. So we talk about now.
Okay. Yeah, we're talking now.
It's Control by Anton Corbijn. Is that how you say his name?
It's a weird name.
I've been spelling it as Corbijn until, like, last month, so I don't know.
Yeah, me too, because we pronounce the ages here, so.
Yeah.
The G.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, I'm Sam Riley. Yeah.
it's a 2007 biopic about on Ian Curtis, the doom lead singer of the band Joy Division, and like my number three, like all like the movies on my list, all of which are like very recent movies. Like this movie got me into Joy Division, and you know at the time when I watched it was like one of the first modern black and white movies I had seen, and I was kind of like amazed by it, like because I didn't think that, like, you know, they made black and white movies nowadays. But like, what after like you get into Joy Division, like you can't like, it's kind of obvious that it was in black and white, and it's so beautiful, like the way it's shot, and it's really sad, but and it's like acted like so well by Sam Riley and Samantha Morton.
I actually know nothing about Joy Division. I never heard a music, a single song from them. I don't think I ever will, honestly, because it's just not my style. But it's a great movie, and it's the only one that I like without liking the artist itself. Because it's that great a movie. You don't even have to like Joy Division to enjoy it.
Wow.
It's pretty comprehensive too. Like it actually really tells you most of the story of the band. Like there is a really on Joy Division. I think it's even just called Joy Division. That I saw it at the same Control played the Toronto Film Festival in 2007, and that year the first film I saw at the film festival was Control, and the last one I saw was this documentary called Joy Division. So it kind of flanked it. So, you know, if you ever were curious about it, you could watch the documentary, but it'll mostly tell you things that you already know.
Because it's a movie.
Yeah,
Yeah, it basically tells the rise and fall of the whole band, so, of him.
It was especially sad. Like, I remember feeling especially bad for him, because, you know, like, most other he died, right? So most other, like, famous musicians who have died young.
Most
of the others, it used to be because of, like, drugs and stuff, right? I mean, it's not, like, it's horrible that anyone died, but, like, I think I'd seen, like, Sid and Nancy just, like, months before that. But this was sad, especially because he didn't have any control over it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And 23 is just, it's too young.
Yeah.
It's horrible.
Okay, I haven't seen this movie, but...
You should watch it. It's
sure. And it's, yeah, a very beautiful movie.
I had this friend who had this big crush on Sam Riley, so she talked about this movie a lot, but I sort of forgot about it. So
I ended up coming to it more for Anton Corbijn, a fan of his photography. I was once upon a time I was going to be a photographer, and I still do use my camera a lot, but I was going to like go be a professional photographer, and he was one of the photographers that influenced me. So when I found out that he was starting to make film, I was just overjoyed. And this movie, there are so many shots that I could just pause and frame on my wall. It's such a stunning film.
Yeah. And even the dialogue, everything, it's very poetic. He actually recites poetry all the time.
He actually recites lyrics from his song. Yeah. That's like the thing.
Cool. Another movie for my watch list.
I also think that in honor of Control, you guys need to do an episode dedicated to black and white movies.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
There you go. Done. My job.
Okay. Brian, you're number two.
My number two. I felt the need to have a Canadian film on this list, and a recent favorite, and certainly a recent favorite where music is concerned. It actually kind of really rekindled my love of music, because I was kind of waiting years there. It's a film from 2011 called Café de Flore, and it's directed by Jean-Marc Vallée. It's about a DJ and how he's balancing two relationships, his failed marriage and his budding new romance. And music plays an important part in both, because his failed marriage, they were teenage sweethearts, and they were brought together by their love of music. His new romance was kind of sparked when he saw this girl and a certain song was, and underscoring all of this, there's this kind of idea of reincarnation and previous lives and soulmates and that kind of thing. And there's so much discussion about music. There's this one cute little dance song that plays throughout the whole movie, and you just end up hearing it in your head like for days afterwards. And it's so beautiful. It's such a beautiful story. I'm going to guess that none of you have seen it.
I've seen it.
Yay!
And it was very close to being in my list. I love it. And like, I'm still sort of obsessed with the soundtrack.
I listened to a lot of Pink Floyd.
No, it got me into Sigur Rós. Again, don't know how to play.
Yeah.
But, oh god, it was such a pretty movie. And it was so weird. I was not expecting that movie. I thought it was like, because everyone kept saying it's music, even though that is our list, but like the rest of the stuff which happens in it, it was kind of amazing.
It's an unusual choice. It wouldn't quite be my first choice, but as I was thinking about this, I looked over the movies that I care about, and this one sort of jumped out, because it's not so much about musicians. It's a little bit like High Fidelity, where it's about people who love music, and you know, the way music can rekindle memories, the way you can actually use music as a weapon if you play the wrong song at the wrong moment. And there's a long conversation about how the moment love of his life he couldn't choose the song that was playing. Like, the song that was playing is this trite little dance number.
Yeah.
But it's just, it was the song for that moment. And it's really, really good movie.
Okay, so we're into number one territory now. And I'll start off with my number one, which is The Boat That Rocked, or like Nick said, it was released under the title Pirate Radio in America. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time, all day and all of the night, all day and all of the night. It's a 2009 comedy by Richard Curtis, and I just have to say that I love Richard Curtis. He makes very commercial movies and more is very known for his romantic comedies, but I think that he is somebody who actually makes some of the good romantic comedies.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And he wrote one of my favorite Doctor Who episodes. Vincent and the Doctor. But yeah, this was my first movie of his that I saw, and as I said, that Taking Woodstock introduced me to some of that 60s, lifestyle and music, and The Boat That Rocked definitely added to that since it was released in the same year. It has a very simple story, it has a lot of characters, but people said it had too many subplots and things like that, and I wouldn't agree to that. I mean, it's more like, I wouldn't say screwball comedy, but yeah, things keep getting added to the main storyline, and it's just about a young boy teenage boy trying to find out who his father is and just coming of age in that way, and he gets sent to his godfather, Quentin, who's played by Bill Nighy, and who runs a radio station, which is a pirate radio station, which is on a boat. So and it's called Radio Rock. So it's just this very quirky boat with the very set of characters and a lot of 60s stuff and details, and I just thought it's very entertaining, and we will probably say about all our movies, it got me interested in some bands like The Who and The Kinks and Martha and the Vandellas and just a lot of 60s, just maybe your usual 60s music, but I didn't know much about it, so it was really new to me, and I'm very happy about that. So,
I know that movie. Yeah, because I saw it on television, and I only knew the Portuguese title.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
Why I was not associating. Then he said a boat and Bill Nighy, and I was like, it's funny, funny.
Yeah.
Although funny. Would you
believe I've never seen it?
Really?
Wow.
A lot of people don't like it, which I don't get.
Yeah, it's
hilarious.
I don't expect very much from it, but just the fact that I've never seen it at all is kind of sad.
it's really funny. I had gone into it because The Young Boy is played by this actor called Tom Sturridge, and when it was coming out, I was kind of obsessed with Tom Sturridge. But once I watched it, it's really funny. I actually, this new year, I started it with watching it because I was at a sleepover and my friends had never seen it. And they thought it was perfect. And it's very, very funny. It's got all these great actors, really funny actors. It's got Philip Seymour Hoffman. It's got Reza Fons and Nick Frost and Chris O'Dowd, who's awesome. And Kenneth Branagh and all these people, and it's just such a cool. Even I was that was the moment I was getting into 60s, and it was just explosion of awesomeness. And it's got probably my favorite deleted scenes collection. You've got to create the latest scenes. There's one, which one of the weirdest things about the movie, I will say that, is that it has like no Beatles in it, which is kind of insane.
Yeah.
It's like set in the 60s, like British 60s, but there's like this one deleted scene in which like Philip Seymour Hoffman, like his character, he takes all the others to like Abbey Road, and it's got like this little speech on the Beatles, which is like one of the most perfect things I've ever heard about the Beatles.
So, cool.
Yeah.
I need to.
Is that Rolling Stones?
Yeah. And it has a lot of Stones.
Okay. I was going to say, if it had no Beatles and no Stones, then that would be like very tricky to pull off.
Yeah, I don't know. It has everyone else. It has Hendrix, it has Pooh, it has King.
Maybe they just didn't have the budget to get any Beatles songs.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe. It's really expensive.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, maybe. I don't know. Because it's like, in the deleted scenes, right? Like, because they have like this, like this intro by Richard Curtis. And he talks about how much like he liked Beatles. I think there's also like the thing, like, he thought like once he started quitting Beatles, he wouldn't stop. So. Because he talks about like how like it used to be like a big influence on him.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's like food. Like, you know, you want, like, it's like that, like my whole idea of like 60s, right? Like to be in that dining space. And that movie was like one of those things.
Yeah, and that you girl know, who.
Listening to Beatles when it's first coming out. Oh my god.
The girl who plays the main love interest, she was like my idol for a year or so. She just has that one outfit and I wanted to look just like her. But, yeah.
Lula Riley?
Yeah. I mean, just in the movie. Not, I don't know her outside of it, but she has that very specific 60s look.
Yes, yes.
Which I love. And, yeah. But I feel that this movie doesn't get enough recognition.
No. I never heard of it before watching it, and since then, I've barely ever seen anyone talk about it.
I did hear, I saw the trailer several times in the theaters, which was why I watched it in the first place. But afterwards, I never heard about it.
Yeah.
I tell you, it came, this was, you know, the year Hugh Jackman had hosted the Oscars.
Okay.
I remember it so well, because after the Oscars had gotten over, they showed like a little clip of all the movies which are coming out, at least over here.
Oh, I remember that.
And this was then, since I was obsessed with Tom Sturridge, I was like, oh my god, I have to watch this.
But you were talking about Richard Curtis and how he's great and all. I must say I hate him a little bit. Because of Love Actually. Because he portrayed the Portuguese in such an insulting way.
Oh,
it's like, we're not like that. We don't kiss people on the mouth, okay? And we're not all fat and dirty and walking around without shoes or whatever he did. It's awful. I hated it.
But
it's just that one scene, though, right?
Doesn't matter. One scene that he got to portray our culture, and it's awful. It's like it doesn't even make sense. Where did he get that idea? It's not.
Yeah, I agree. I did think that was a bit insulting. But then again, the girl is really lovely, so.
Yeah, the girl, like, what's her name? Oh my god, I'm such a bad Portuguese.
The character is Sophia.
Yeah, but
No, the character is Aurelia.
Yeah, but the actress, she's really a Portuguese actress. She's very known here.
Mm-hmm.
Well, whatever. But, so, it was nice to see her in a big movie, but really, it's just Lucy Maniche.
Don't you love like Bridget Jones and stuff?
Oh no, I like his movies, but
like him. You just hate him.
In that little moment, I hated him. I walked out of the theater so mad.
It's the one thing about that great movie that rubs her the wrong way.
Yeah.
Oh man. Meanwhile, that's the movie that makes me feel good every November.
True. I have to rewatch it.
Yeah. I watch Bridget Jones every Valentine's Day.
Yeah. It's a great movie. And Notting Hill, I mean, it's great.
So, Nick, your number one was my number two.
yeah, my number one is Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. I think it's kind of obvious if you have been on my blog, but I think I talk about it a bit. And it's a 2008 film based on the novel of the same name by David Levithan and Rachel Korn. And it stars Michael Cera, Kat Dennings, Jay Baruchel, and Ari Grainer. And I adore it. It's like my ultimate feel-good movie as well. And it's like, it has a lot of things which I like in the movie. It's not just the music thing. You know, I have a thing for movies which are set in a specific like span of time, and like this is set like in like one night. So I have like there's like that thing. It's I think it's like a smart rom com, and I love rom coms.
Mm-hmm. So, good ones.
Yeah, and it has Michael Cera. Yeah. So basically, it's about I have like a really terrible synopsis, which I was going to do. It's about this guy called Nick, and who is in a band. He's in this all-gay band, but he's not gay. And they have, like, separate names, which is, like, the Jerk-Offs and Fistful of Assholes, etc., etc. And then there's the girl, played by Kat Dennings, called Nora. And she's, like, this kind of, like, sassy girl, but she's a bit insecure. And she's always looking after, like, her drunk best friend, Caroline. And they go to the same school where Nick's ex goes, who's a bitch. And somehow, like, in one night, they all end up going to New York City, where their favorite band is called West Fluffy, is playing a secret show. And then, like, Nick and Nora's fates get entwined somewhat. And the thing about the movie which I love the most is, like, kind of, like, it's a bit of, like, a romantic ideal for me. Not much of the actual romance part, but, like, the idea of, like, being in, like, a place like that and just going about all night, like, listening to bands and things. Just something I've been from such a different, like, I remember when I first watched it and I was like, where are their parents? Why don't they care? Like, their kids are out all night. Okay, but it's kind of like that. So it's about that fact that, you know, you have, like, being in a city like that where, like there's like music all night, and I really like the idea of a musical soulmate, because I just watched Frances Ha, and I like that, you know, soulmate don't have to be like a romantic soulmate, I think, like a soulmate. So it's all of that, and obviously I love the music. It's got like one of my favorite soundtracks ever.
Yeah. I love this movie too. I've only seen it once, but that was last year, I think, and with my sister. And it's always cool to see a movie with your sister when both love it. I mean, as probably most people know, we had a big fight, not fight, but we disagreed about Gravity a lot. But and about Before Midnight, but this one we both loved, and it's just such a great experience, especially when you watch it as a teenage girl. But this doesn't mean it's just made for that specific group. It's a lot more than that, I think. And it's very funny in places as well. And like you, Nick, I find it very interesting that it happens just in one night. Just like a lot of these movies that do that are very good, I think, because it sort of it gives it more room, but also less room in a way, if that makes sense. So I really like the opportunities that gives and or that you get out of that, and it's very well shot as well, and I love the artwork on the CDs, and it's just adorable.
Yeah, I watch it like twice every year. It's like when I have nothing to watch, if I watch something which has been like sort of I don't know, really, really serious and like I'm like very shaken by it, I would probably watch Nick and Nora to like calm myself down and get into like a happy mood. So it's that kind of a movie for me. But I love it.
But it's
and even like and I liked it more than the novel.
Okay. I haven't read that, but now you say that about being happy, it's sort of escapism, but it's also, I felt that it was very realistic in times, just meaning that the dialogue seemed very natural and the way that they talk to each other and sort of, I don't know if they fall in love, like, I don't know, but just the way their relationship develops feels very realistic and natural.
Yeah, and I really like again, like the city aspect of it. Cause, like,
I always like...
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, I always like the fact that that we never actually hear where's Fluffy.
Yeah. that's good.
Thing that there's supposed to be this you know this great indie band that everybody in the know really loves and will like run all over the city into the dead of night to go to a concert, but that we never their music. I always thought that was a great idea.
Yeah
I agree.
And I was saying I really like, you know, because I've watched it so many times, like they have like these weird, like, you know, when they keep fighting there'll be someone from like the streets who will come and like scream something at them. And I like those kind of things. Like, there's a part where she goes, like, I'm not jealous. And then some person is just, like, rides a bike over and just goes, like, no, dude, she's not jealous. So, things like that. I really like that. So, yeah. And I like the lead. You know, they've got, like, such great chemistry together. And they're so, like, cute.
Yeah. Sophia, what's your number one?
My number one is Not There, the Bob Dylan biopic, sort of. Like a complete unknown, like
a rolling stone.
Has anyone not watched this?
I've seen it.
Yeah, okay. I was 16 when I watched it, and I had just begun listening to Bob the push that I got to become really obsessed with him. I've mentioned this here. I think I did presentations in school about this film. I don't know what I was thinking when I was doing this stuff, but yeah, I did it. And I love this film so much. It's about sort of seven movements throughout Bob Dylan's career, and you have six actors playing them. You have, you know it, but everyone else. It's Christian Bale. It's Cate Blanchett. Marcus, Carl Franklin, Richard Gere, Heath Ledger, Benwick Shaw. Then you have Michelle Williams and Charles Gainsbourg. It's just this whole list of A-list actors that are in it. And for each of them, you have a different style. It's almost like watching seven different movies, right?
Yeah.
People think that it's messy and it's just plain crazy. But I think that is Bob Dylan, and the more I got to know about him, the more I love the film for exactly portraying, at least to me, what Bob Dylan was and in a way is, although now he's a little, he stopped basically. But yeah, it's a little disappointing actually. You know, that a friend of mine went to a concert of his some time ago. It was before I moved to Lisbon, so I couldn't go. And she was a fan, but she was so disappointed in his concert because he was singing like he didn't want to be there at all, but like not even in a cool way like before. It was just flat out annoying, and she couldn't hear a thing, and she wasn't right in front. So yeah,
my brother actually went to see him on his 30th birthday, club that held about 300 people, and he sat in the front row. He's like my life is just over. I don't need to do anything else now. I'm seeing him miles away from home in the front row in a small room. And he said it was amazing because it was just him and a guitar.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, this is a huge concert, so that's why.
Yeah. It's he's really started screwing around with his audience. Like, he doesn't play He doesn't even play the songs arranged the same way that people are used to.
Yeah.
Usually sometimes he's not even out in front. He's like way over on the side playing piano. Well, actually, just to the movie, I liked that they had different people portraying different parts of his life, because even though it doesn't seem that he's a chameleon in the same way that like somebody like David Bowie is, mm-hmm. he's just over the course of his career.
Mm. Very different styles, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I really...
I wasn't all that crazy about the whole Billy the Kid, Richard Gere part of the movie. That part I could have done.
Yeah, that's...
I thought that was a step too far.
Yeah, that's the least one. That's the one I liked the least.
Actually, I love the Cape Blanchett.
That's the one everyone remembers, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's what I remember too.
The scenes are just surrealist. It's just...
And she's beautiful. Just awesome.
Yeah. That's one of my favorite performances ever. I saw that and I was like, oh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's even
steals the show in the film.
Even when you've heard a lot about it. It's great. But
what, Nick?
Ben Whishaw.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too.
Yeah.
I don't even remember. There's a lot of parts of this movie I don't remember, but. Like Ben Whishaw, I know he's in it, but I don't remember.
He played Grimbald.
Okay.
He does the monologues.
Oh yeah.
Sitting.
That's right. Yeah, that I did like. I do have the DVD at home, but I've never watched it again.
Really, I've watched it so many times. I just it's sad. I know it has flaws, but. That's what I love about this movie. You know, it's very organic. And every time I read about Todd Haynes and his journey to make the film, you can really see that he's a fan. You know,
mm.
I think that comes in all the actors, and I think that comes through in the film. So, I just love this.
Okay, your number one, Ryan.
My number one is from 1991. It's an Irish movie called The Commitments. Mustang Sally. Guess who better slow than Mustang down. Has any of you seen this?
No.
Nope. I've never even heard of it.
No, me neither.
Wow. Okay. Then this is my gift to you, because I hope that of all the movies we've talked about, if you were to start with one movie, that you would watch this movie, because it's so much fun. So it's about a group of they're all early 20-something working class Irish people who form a band, and they're the hardest working band in Dublin, and they decide that they are going to play soul music, because soul music, they say, is the music of the working class people of Dublin. They form, the band is called The Commitments. They play music by Al Green and Otis Redding and Aretha Franklin and Wilson Pickett, and it's really funny because they're all just working class stiffs who, when they meet, they can't really play well, and then they all kind of gel together. They don't completely get along. It's a pretty big band. I think there's about 9 or 10 of them in the band. And the one guy who forms the band, his name is Jimmy Rabbit. He's the manager, and he's the guy who's always walking around with the newest music, and he knows about all the songs, but he can't play anything. So he forms this band thinking that it's a way for them to go nowhere lives as working class Irish and maybe do something special. And it's really, really funny. The guitarist in The Commitments is actually Glenn Hansard from Once, but really, really young, and he's got long, scraggly red hair.
Cool.
So they play songs like Mustang Sally and Chain of Fools and Try a Little Tenderness, and it's so funny and so much fun. And there's actually a line where somebody The trumpet player for the band shows up to audition, and he says, "My name is Joey the Lips Fagan." To which the manager replies, "Right, and I'm Jimmy the Bollocks Rabbit." My younger brother actually for the longest time had his email address as jimmythebollocks@somethingbrother.com, and he said the first girl who knows what that's a reference to, I will marry. But yeah, it's such a great movie. It's kind of hard to talk about if you haven't seen it. But it's so much fun. It's written by, does any of you know the author Roddy Doyle?
Nope.
Okay.
Anyway, he's a really famous Irish author. He's written some great books like The Snapper and that kind of thing. So he wrote the original book, and then the movie is an adaptation of the book. So the book is really good too.
Okay.
I don't know what else to say about it, but just that it's really, really good. So check it out if you never have seen it.
Yeah, and we thought that in addition to our general discussion with the guest, we'd ask our fellow podcasters and bloggers, just film buffs on the internet, whether they want to add their top three of each topic, which this time is, of course, the first time. So we asked people on Twitter and Facebook and other medias to share their top three non-musical music movies. And yeah, so you guys just go first. Did you get any answers?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I got one, just one. It was Le. I don't know her real name, but she runs that blog, that Brazilian blog, Critica Retro. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
No.
But she chose. She had only two, but she chose Amam, La Vie en Rose. I mean.
Yeah.
And the Glenn Miller story, which I had never heard of it. It's a movie from 1954. She's a classics fan. And it actually stars James Stewart as Glenn Miller. So you got to watch that one.
Cool. Okay, Nick?
A friend of mine, Naveta, she inboxed me with her. And the first one is a movie called The Music Never Stopped, which she saw. She's studying psychology. So they saw it as alternative therapy, and they discussed it, and she really liked it. And School of Rock, which she says molded her early middle school years, and High Fidelity. And yeah, and she also mentioned, she was the one who asked about A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, okay. anything else?
Or,
no? Okay. So, I asked, I got two responses on Twitter. Rakhav, I guess is his name, and a guy from India. You can find him at Rakhav Modi. And he said Wedding Singer and Sound of Music, but that he couldn't think of any third one, and that Singing in the Rain is borderline. I personally wouldn't say that Sound of Music... It's definitely a musical, I think.
Yeah,
me too.
But, okay.
It's still great.
It's great, yeah. And then Colin, you can find him at Just Like Colin, said Walk the Line, Almost Famous, and Amadeus.
Yay, Walk the Line.
And then my sister also replied. And she said... Number three, The Last Song. It's not that bad. I just have to say that.
You should put that on the poster.
Yeah. Number two, 8 Mile. I like that one too.
Me too.
And number one, Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist. So. Yeah. So that's it. But next time we'll try and contact people again, and we hope that maybe now you've heard the answers, maybe we'll get a few more responses. That would be great, but still, yeah. Still thanks to everyone who participated in our little experiment. Okay. I guess then this wraps up our discussion for today. Any plugs?
Yeah, I do have a plug, actually.
Okay.
Jessica from the Velvet Cafe. Mm-hmm. She just wrote an article that we will all appreciate. It is called An Open Letter to Popcorn After Watching Gravity.
Okay.
You can guess that it's about the immense noise that people make in theaters.
Yeah.
And in Gravity, it was a really bad time to start eating popcorn.
Yeah, I didn't take any popcorn with me. I did take some, but I ate it all in the trailers because everyone had said that. But it was annoying. Yeah, there are a lot of people. Yeah.
Well, there are ways of eating popcorn without making too much noise. So people just don't know what to do.
Nick, did you have anything?
I don't remember. Oh, there is a vlogathon, Metal Ray, right?
Yeah.
Vlogathon, and it's called Breaking Emotions.
Emotions, yeah.
Yeah, and it's about every week she's going to give two emotions, and then you're supposed to put in, make a list of three or five scenes which sort of show those emotions. So last year she did the movie Alphabet Vlogathon, which I really liked.
Yeah.
I hope I do it this year too.
Cool.
Sounds like a good one.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't have anything this week. So what's going on your blog, Ryan?
Well, when is this going up next week? When's this going up?
Yeah.
Okay, so by that time, episode 98 of the Matinee Cast will be up. We talked about Escape from Tomorrow, and you can catch all the written work on my site, thematinee.ca.
Cool. So, again, I'm Matt, and you can find my blog under limereviews.blogspot.com, and you can find me on Twitter at Matt Kowalski.
I'm Nikhat, and you can find my blog at beingnormaljane.blogspot.com and on Twitter at Nikhat_Z, which is NIKHAT_Z/C.
And I'm Sophia. You can find me at filmflare.pt or on Twitter under filmflareblog.
You can find Ryan McNeil, our guest on this episode, on thematinee.ca or on Twitter at matinee_ca. You can send us your feedback on any of our blogs, or you can go to Facebook. It's at facebook.com/AcrossTheUniversePodcast. We would love to hear what we could maybe improve about the podcast or things you liked. And of course, you can always choose to contact us via email at AcrossTheUniversePodcast@gmail.com. You can find our old episodes on iTunes and Podomatic, and the even older ones on the links from Facebook or on our blogs. So we would like to thank you, Ryan, for joining us today. I think we all had a great experience.
Yeah.
Okay.
I've
really, really been enjoying the cuts in and out. I've really, really been enjoying listening to your shows and certainly honored that I could be your first guest. I responded, I think, to Nick that when I got the invitation to come on this show, I happened to be walking through a very downtown crowded street and a huge smile burst on my face. So I kind of wish I could have got a reaction shot to me looking at the invitation. So thank you very much for having me, and I'd be happy to come back anytime.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
And you're welcome.
Yeah. The next episode will be all about murder, femme fatale, and low-key lightning as we celebrate the month of Noirvember. So until then, bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Words are flowing out like endless rain into a paper cup. They slither while they pass, they slip away across the universe. Pull Swells of sorrow, waves of joy are drifting through my open mind, possessing and caressing.